Life Without Oxygen in the Tropical Pacific. On January 16th, Schmidt Ocean Institute's research vessel Falkor began its latest expedition. The 10 scientists on board are studying life within the huge oxygen minimum zone that lies in the Pacific Ocean. It stretches from Hawaii all the way to the coast of the Americas, from Mexico to Costa Rica, which incidentally are the two countries from where I come. As you may have noticed by my accent, Falkor is an international ship. Here, many nationalities come together with the common goal of increasing our knowledge about the oceans. Since oxygen minimum zones are the reactors of the planet, in charge of many of the chemical processes that make life on Earth possible, getting to understand how they work is extremely important. Data suggests that oxygen minimum zones are expanding, and climate change may be contributing to this expansion. That raises many questions, and so does life on a ship. Kids studying the fifth grade sent us a list of questions that our resident scientists tried to answer. Over the next 10 minutes, we'll share those questions with you and the conversation they ignited.
Okay, so the first question is, what is the prettiest thing you have seen while sailing?
The salt crystals that were developing on the sun deck were interesting to see. You know, the manifestation of all of the spray, the humid atmosphere, and then becoming material on the surface of the boat. It's nice to see that process.
I like the incredibly blue water and the seemingly infinite horizon. I really enjoy that at sea.
Yeah, I love looking at the waves and the white caps too. I also got to say, my filters are really pretty from last night.
I like the moon on the water. That's really pretty. Being out in the middle of the ocean is one of the darkest places you can get to, so you see so many great things at night.
I like standing on the back deck and seeing a wave that's taller than the ship, and then just going right over it without any problems. It's fun.
It's like summer camp at sea in without all the games. Maybe strike that.
Science camp.
I think it's fun how we can, you know, we do the CTD, which happens on a lot of oceanographic cruises, and you can see the oxygen profile and the temperature and stuff. But then also some of the analyses that we're doing, we're getting results the same day, which is pretty exciting to see.
Then it's fun. Science in real time.
I think it's fun to be able to focus on your science. We're so lucky on the ship that people are taking care of a lot of other things for us, and that's such a big help. People are cleaning up after us, people are making us food, people are even doing our laundry. And so being able to I just think it's really a great treat to be able to focus on science in that way.
What kind of marine mammals have you seen?
Mammals. I saw dolphins.
Pilot whales the second day, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Have you found any new organisms?
We probably found some new organisms, but we won't know until we get back to the laboratory on the mainland to analyze our samples.
Are you studying oxygen minimum zones, and are they the same as dead zones?
Well, they're similar to what people call dead zones because the oxygen concentrations are low, but actually they're not really dead zones because they're full of living microorganisms. They're different because of the causes. So the dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico are caused largely because of pollution that comes out of the Mississippi River. So nitrogen pollution causes really big phytoplankton blooms. And when those blooms die, it uses up all the oxygen. And the difference between the oxygen minimum zones and the open ocean, they're caused by a similar process in terms of why the oxygen's getting used up, but they're caused by what I would consider natural phytoplankton blooms.
So what is the future outlook of the O2 levels here?
So observations of oxygen over previous decades have found that the oxygen is decreasing in most of these oxygen minimum zones at a relatively slow rate. But the thing that the community doesn't know is what's causing it. You know, is it climate change through warming of the upper ocean that's preventing that mixing of those low oxygen waters from getting up to the surface and breathing with the atmosphere to get more oxygen, or long-term cycle effect that's causing it. You know, I think it's so early in the study of these of deoxygenation that we don't know what the cause can be.
What kind of animals or things can live in OMCs?
Squid are one organism that are thought to do really well in low oxygen conditions, and we've seen some squid out here.
But no, we've gotten some emails from colleagues who study zooplankton and larger microbiota that persist or thrive in these low oxygen waters. It's a difficult thing. You know, how do you go somewhere where you can't breathe? Do you breathe something else, or do you hold your breath, breathing nitrate?
How would you describe a regular day on board?
Long.
I don't know if we've had like a typical day yet. It seems like every other day we wake up, we see the schedule, and it's shifted a little bit from the previous day, which kind of is keeps us on our toes, you could say. But there's always breakfast and lunch and dinner, so that's nice.
Would you rather discover 3 new species or solve a major ocean problem and win the Nobel Peace Prize?
The Nobel Prize part is fun and everything, but actually solving a big problem would be really satisfying. And I don't think it's going to be done by one person, because the problems are large and confusing.
And I think another point is that in Earth science, there is no Nobel Prize. You know, there is one for chemistry and biology and economics, but there isn't one for Earth science. And I think actually that's a really good thing. I've been at meetings of young scientists where they talk about who the next Nobel Prize winner will be in their field, and that's in the back of all their minds. But that's not in our minds because there's no prize. So I think that makes us a little bit of a kinder community, because we have to work together well to be at sea, and we're not aiming for some big prize. We're just aiming to do good work that might help people.
Do you get seasick, and what do you eat, Tristan?
All right, there's your question.
It's definitely faded over time. But when I was feeling seasick, the things I ate were nothing. I just didn't eat anything because that made me feel worse. But then as soon as that's gone, I've just been stuffing my face.
We eat well. Yeah, the chefs are great. I'll say, having not been seasick and being able to eat every meal and enjoy it, it's been pretty awesome.
What is your favorite place to explore?
Lately, this has been my favorite spot. This is our third trip to this area. Yeah, it's a fun place because it's pretty remote. But it's still got really interesting chemistry and biology.
If cells adapt to deal with global warming and then humans decrease global warming, would it be harmful to the cells? How would it be harmful?
We don't really know who the winners and losers of climate change are going to be. I mean, obviously, if we heat the place up for a while and then somehow somewhat miraculously cool it down, there would be a new set of winners and losers. That's the way evolution works. It starts with what came before, and then you land someplace with a community that works with the current conditions. If you were to change it back to the original condition, you wouldn't get the original community back necessarily.
Okay. What are the dangers of working on the ship?
Falling in general, like running into things and having stuff fall on top of you could be another danger if it's not tied down.
Yeah, I mean, I think people, when you talk about going on a research expedition, they imagine fun things like shuffleboard and stuff like that. But really, it's an industrial environment with heavy equipment, heavy machinery.
Yeah, you say
wires.
Cruise and people think, oh, that sounds very relaxing. Right. And actually, there's about 20 cranes on the back decks, and you're always having to wear hard hats and life jackets. So if you do fall with lights on them, so if you do fall over, people can see you. And you have to wear restraints when it's really choppy so that you don't fall in the water. It's an industrial.
Yeah, but that said, I mean, safety is the number one priority, and all operations are done in an effort to stay safe. So,
how much of the ocean has been studied?
You know, there's so many different attributes of the ocean that we study, so it's hard to put a number on, right? I mean, a lot of the microbes we're studying have only been known for a decade or two, so how much do we know about where they are and what they're doing is very limited, because we've had very little time to do so. And same thing for a lot of the chemistry analyses. That's one of the big challenges of oceanography, is that we're trying to give society some assessment of how the oceans are doing when we've only been studying certain attributes of it for a decade or two decades.
How do the organisms you're talking about affect other organisms such as dolphins, seals, fish, etc.?
Microbes are at the base of the food chain. So microbes are able to get energy from sunlight, and then those microbes can get eaten by larger organisms like zooplankton, which eventually get eaten by fish, which eventually get eaten by dolphins. So we're really studying the very base of the food chain that's fundamental to all living things.
Finally, what are scientists doing to help the ocean regarding O2 and CO2?
I guess we're trying to define how the system really works right here and now, right?
Although it's a very unsatisfying answer that we predominantly diagnose rather than like prescribe treatments for how we would engineer solutions to these problems. We go out and try and study what's going on now, what may have gone on in the past if we study the sediments or other records, and what that might tell us about the change that might happen in the future. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we then say, oh, what can we do to to solve these problems. We need to know what the problems are and how they operate.
Thank you for listening. The scientists you just heard are Max Saito, chief scientist; Eric Webb, environmental microbiologist; Alison Santoro, microbial oceanographer; Tristan Horner, geochemist; Blake Clark, PhD student; and Michelle Schwengel, artist. Be sure to follow the Life Without Oxygen expedition on schmidocean.org.